It worked out well before the before the
sir, anger doctor, this diesel tax and the petrol tax is hard. Yeah. It is hard. I mean, it's not hard, anything that I'm thrilled about or I enjoy. But what I think we need to do is we need to ensure that the money goes to the purpose for which it was intended. Correct. If as a result of that tax, I find the roads improve and I feel that government is able to provide some of the services it wants, was able to provide, then I am not going to quibble. But I don't take any delight in telling you what I told you about the ticket tax. I mean, nobody has talked about that. But I am in a peculiar business environment where that will hurt me directly. And yeah. And then you talk about assessing charges on credit cards. The only way you can buy a plane ticket is if you use a credit card, which means that I will automatically then have to pay taxes in a way that I have never paid before because there's something that's levied on plane tickets. Twice, because there was one before in terms of the tax that was there on the purchase of foreign exchange. But this is the nature of the beast, and I think all of us understood that we were in a situation and we need to get ourselves out of that situation. So, you know, I suspect that when you meet the minister, he will listen to you for, you know, intentively and whatnot and tell you, buddy, you know, you got to pay diesel tax.
And finally, because I only talk about the program that long, but is that I guess we have been blessed with the moss in a way, because the type of fish that is coming out, the amberjack, it makes flying fish look, can't tell you, but it's a very, very good fish. And right now, fishermen are fishing continually. Before, boats used to be tied up, so to speak, on the chain, as we would say.
Mm-hmm.
But now, fellas are fishing through the whole season. And the season almost is back here, and fellas encourage to fish.
So you're saying that the seaweed has actually helped?
Listen, even as much as 15, 20 miles from Barbados, people are bringing boatloads of amberjack. And other tabbies, and they're smaller fish, and some people say they get as big as 20 pounds, right?
Okay.
And there's abundance of amberjacks around. And the fellas, people talk bone, people fillet them, they cook all the bones, and they become a very, very nice fish. And so if I had a preference now, I do not choose flying fish. I choose amberjack, as we call them.
Well, I tend not to choose flying fish myself anyhow. I'm not an amberjack person, but I'm happy to hear you saying this, because there don't seem to be a whole lot of benefits coming out of this seaweed issue.
Because I'm telling you that right now the fishermen are encouraged.
But that's great.
And also this week, because they spend a lot of time in the market, and there are lots of dolphin and good-sized dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, the flying fish will not close on the boat, as we would say. They will not come, because any fish, only fish that flying fish would actually be not afraid of is a fray, which is one of the smallest fish you could find. But anything bigger than that, a flying fish does not come or congregate to spawn.
Okay.
So with the amount of amberjacks around, people say, I talk boatloads, people get like hundreds of pounds. 200, 300, 400 pounds.
And you sell amberjack for more than a flying fish?
They're selling from the boat like $4 a pound.
Okay.
$3.
A flying fish will sell at what?
It's a optional commodity with PS, you know, like 70, 80, 90, 100.
Okay.
So they're selling like hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, like, a flying fish might sell at $2 for one, when you think $2 for one.
And you catch amberjacks in the net or with a line?
No, you have to, that's what I'm saying, is that we perhaps have to develop different techniques that we could catch more of them, but right now we have to hand line. Just one.
So that means it's more time consuming.
Just like dolphin,
we
have to catch them each.
Which is not a problem if it's a large fish. If it's a small fish, the time doesn't really compensate you.
No, then you use other gearing for that, like the long line gear. But dolphins, when you have a fellow catch 400 and 500 dolphins, he has to catch each of them separately.
Right.
So amberjack is the same thing. And terrapins and all of those fish come together with the moss. So it's amazing. And fellas,
I'm happy that you've said that and made that declaration, because I haven't heard a lot of good that seems to have come out of the seaweed issue. I also want to tell you that I over the summer, I was on the Sicilian coast, which is the other side of the North African coast.
Yeah.
And several of the beaches were heavily laden with seaweed. And the difference is that we seem to make an effort to clean it, but the Sicilians don't seem to care. And I saw people mucked in towels on top of thick piles of seaweed, smelling stink, and lying down and taking a tan. So the feeling that we have that this is a peculiar problem to the Caribbean and so on, it really is a global phenomenon. And I was fascinated to see, I mean, a good quantity, a heavy load of seaweed being deposited on their shores. And then not only in one place, but several of the beaches we saw it. And it doesn't look as though the authorities have even raised a finger to see if there's anything that they could do to remove it or anything like that. So the fact that you are saying to me now that the seaweed is actually beneficial to the fishing industry, I think that that's something useful for people to hear.
Very, very, very useful. I sorry, Mr. Vickham, for taking up most of your time. I tried to be sharp, but I hope also that...
It was good talking to you, and I'm glad we got past the issue of licensing.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to see the transition of that, and we'll be all right.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling, sir, and I do hope that it won't be the last time that you call, and that we can chat again soon. All right? This is Down to Brass Tacks. It is now 1 p.m. and we are here with you until 1:30. So 434-1790 is the number you can call, or you can WhatsApp me 266-IVOB, or you can call me, or you can email me on peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Vickham.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Greetings and salutations and a hearty welcome back.
Thank you,
sir. Airline.
Thank you.
You were truly missed.
Okay.
However, permit me to begin my today's contribution by first quoting Wolfgang von Goethe. Solitude is a wonderful thing when one is at peace with oneself, and then there is a definite task to be accomplished. Mr. Vickham, sir, let's be realistic. These programs are set out to be informative and to educate, not to offend. But at times, we have some callers call because they want to say something and not having something to say. Last week, during a conversation last Thursday with the lady moderator, a caller said, and I quote, that a politician should not be a judge, and he nor a gentleman whose name he didn't call was appointed CJ. Mr. Wickham, you are fully aware, sir, that talking and eloquence are not the same. To speak and to speak well are two things. A fool may talk, but a wise man speaks. Therefore, sir, to explain is really to expose. The gentleman to whom the caller made reference was definitely elevated to be the CJ. And that CJ never lost the case. They never had to make an amendment for his appointment. Whereas the Constitution had to be amended for the appointment of our present CJ. Although the then Prime Minister praised the acting CJ, the Honorable Justice Shirley Moore, for a good job by then. Still, he was denied the top post. Mr. Wickham, sir, during the early 2000s, the Nature newspaper was on record for publishing questionnaires, who said, as stated, letters to the editor, often provide some of the most insightful comments in the press and also give the answers. Mr. Wilkins, sir, I'd be more than grateful to your good self if you be so kind as to check the Nation of Wednesday, October the 27th, 2004, page 10A. When you research it, you realize that Sir David is not only a walking legal encyclopedia, but a luminary.
Okay. All right, sir, I want to thank you for your contribution. We're going to have to take a break, and when we come back, we continue. Welcome back to Dr. Brass Sacks, 434-1790. Good afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome.
How are you, Peter?
Yes, sir, not too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you're back.
All right.
I've been a little bit disappointed in the time you spent with Mr. Straker Stanley, but, you know.
Too much or too little?
Too much time with him.
Okay. Not too little.
Too much time with him. Right. And these people are going to forget, you know. You said even before the election that that I think worse to the effect that you will try to look for a easier place for Ms. Verla de Pisa. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, I think, St. John was one of them that you mentioned.
That was in 2010.
Right, and I know already that how you feel about these women in Parliament. Mm-hmm. You would like to see all as far as they come.
No.
You understand what I mean. Right, yeah,
more than our currently assembled.
Right,
yes.
But you understand me too.
Yes.
Right. Now, you see, you make a comparison there with the cricket and the, you know, the politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the batsman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the good batsman is who the batsman has makes fewer mistakes. He makes fewer mistakes.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, who in the cricket world will remember the years ago where they had a batsman by the name of Graham Pollock who was a white South African, and we had Gary Sobers.
Mm-hmm.
So the whites was trying to push the vibe that Graham Pollock is the best batsman in the world. But when they interviewed his brother, who was an international cricketer too, and asked him for a comment of who the best, he said, that's a very silly question. My brother got some flaws. Sobers has none. Right? That silenced a lot of the things that were going on.
I'm not a cricket person, but I remember the 6-6s. And I always remember that commentators said the 6-6s had a lot less to do with the batsman and a lot more to do with the bowler. Because nobody remembers the name of the bowler simply his career ended pretty swiftly.
I think that is a wrong statement you are making.
Really?
Remember, Malcolm Nash was the bowler. And okay. He said, well, I'm glad to say I happened with people who now know me. Nobody didn't know me before. I'm going to get it for 6-6.
But
and it's gone. And
but,
he is.
But
he
was Malcolm Nash not a particularly bad bowler?
He wasn't a particularly bad bowler. He was glad that a great person could do that to him, that he would get on the record book.
All right, bro.
You understand?
See, I can't really win these arguments because I don't know much about cricket. But all I know is that Sir Gary was outstanding. There's no question about it.
Right.
But the context.
Right. So when these guys talking about the comparison between
Mia Motley and Verla de Pisa.
And then Mr. Straker Stanley could say that you was actually saying that she's a stopgap. Well, in truth and in fact, she really is a stopgap, you know. I can tell why. When there was a difference in the Barbados Labour Party, when Owen turned over to Shane and went back for the Dish Mother, May was already in the House of Assembly. She was in the House of Assembly from then until now. Verla de Pisa has never walked up the steps yet. And she won. She became the president now because of default.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody opposed her. So I don't see where this long lot of pretty talk about trying to compare, you know, Isabel. Oh, we're glad to see that she take it. But remember that she and the vice president were part of this 30 that were brutalized.
Yeah.
And people believe that one of the main reasons of this massive defeat is the castigating of this present prime minister on the platform with some very nasty language.
Mm.
And they came over and said nothing about it.
And I, all of that she will need to answer for.
Right.
Let me take your mind back to Owen Arthur, right? Mm. He became leader of the opposition in 1993.
Somewhere around that time, yeah. Right.
when he was chosen as leader of the opposition. In my opinion, a highly unlikely choice. What you thought?
I thought it was a likely choice.
Yeah.
In the sense that they had senior people there.
There you go.
Who were well respected and everything.
And not only senior people, but they seem to have been a pattern in terms of Barbados Labour Party leaders. So the Henry Fords,
right.
The Bree St. Johns,
right.
The Tom Adams, the Grantley Adams. He just right. did not fit that mold. He never went to Harrison College. Actually,
category.
He did go to Harrison College, but he went
right.
to CP.
Yeah, but he did not fit into the category
precisely.
Of those guys.
And what the point is that you place an unlikely person in a position. The perception, of course, would have been at the time that he can hold on to that post for a little while. But when
but
the
then,
election come and win, he ain't going to become a leader. Right. Owen Arthur has become, I would say, second to our borough in terms of greatness politically. Well, before Mia Motley, of course.
Right,
because
right.
she no hit the ball out of the park altogether. But generally speaking, he surprised a lot of us in terms of his performance. The 99 performance broke records. So one can argue that we really don't know how the political winds will blow. And certainly in the same way that Arthur may appear to have been a stopgap, Verla probably is a stopgap in many people's minds.
Well, to my mind, I believe when that situation arose at that particular time, right, I think that Henry Ford and the other members of the Barbados Labour Party, right, I believe that they did not want to lose
Arthur.
Mm-hmm. Because Tom had brought him.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not want to lose him because of his economic brilliance.
I think you're right.
So when you are comparing these type of people, you cannot put and speak about Verla the President in the same breath as these people.
But they gave a girl as a matter of fact,
Nobody don't know how long we got here on the face of God Earth, right?
Agreed.
But I do not believe, right, that in this lifetime, that no member of that party that lost in the last election will ever walk up Parliament steps.
Hmm.
I think, and a lot more is happening today, which reflects and convinces me about that. So
you may be right.
So all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that when Straker, Stanley, and these people come in with this type of talk, I mean, you lost already, and you know, some people want to forgive Mia so that she is not holding a vengeful attitude towards anybody. And that is the hallmark of a potentially great leader.
And I tell you, I mean, that's the thing that has always impressed me about her, that she doesn't seem to hold grudges.
Enough, yeah?
But what? If she takes blows?
Where these people all have this money
for? For all sides.
Listen, them talk about the BLP in wranglings. When them slaughter that woman in Parliament, going to come in.
There you go.
The door sorting with that woman already. Mm-hmm. And listen.
You remember the strip naked speech?
Let me tell you this here. I do not believe that no woman before or will come after that will endure the punishment and the torment that woman endure in this country. And all Barbadians, all of them should be really proud to go out a person like her. You know,
who can go through all of that and then hold grudges?
You want to tell me what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
I will walk with the common man and feel as comfortable.
Mm.
And very few of them, right, have that approach. And then, listen, I tell you, we don't know how long we got here, but I believe she'll become the greatest Prime Minister Barbados ever see. Mm-hmm. I got a strong belief that.
But she got some records under her belt already. She has records under her belt. There's no question about it. And I don't think it would be possible to write the political history of Barbados and leave her out. I don't believe it's possible to write about the history and leave out Fred Astor either, but for different reasons.
Listen. We know that for a long, long time, right? We have some historians in Barbados, right, that always try to play down the significance of the contribution which the leader of the former leader, Riley Adams.
Okay.
You might not be aware of it, but a lot of them that claim to be these top historians in Barbados, you know. And this is something that you cannot change this history, you know. You can't do nothing about this, you know. What Mayor has just achieved is, as far as I'm concerned, would never be surpassed. Would never be surpassed.
Because you can only be the first ones. You can only be the first ones.
With that, okay then. But Peter, be that as it may, I'm glad I got you back, man. Right.
I'm glad to be here, and it was good. It was good having a little tete-a-tete with you, and I think you and I are seeing eye to eye on a lot of issues, you know. But still, I am still in the corner of saying let's give the Pisa a chance to see what she has to offer. You know, politics for me has always been about context, and I have learned that context is everything. And certainly you may start out a road and say this don't look likely, like Arthur, and you may very well find that, you know, things work out quite well. So as far as the Pisa is concerned, I think that is something that we need to remember. She is an unlikely choice. There's no question about it. But I think all things considered, she's one of the better choices that could have been made. So I hope you join us on Sunday for the program. You listen to hear what she has to say and what I have to say and what the others have to say to her. All right? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Good afternoon. Welcome. We're coming down to the end. 17 minutes past the hour of 1. Mr. Larry Mears has already taken up residence in the studio. So we have a couple more minutes to chat with you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Peter Rico.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
Okay. Glad to hear you once more. Mm-hmm. Amid all of your... We know that you've got a lot of variables, your political analysts, and et cetera. So don't be too concerned with Peter and his stance and his variant views on things, because he's a political analyst. Mm-hmm. This is Raul, man.
Yeah, hey, Raul, how are you going? A long time no hear. I didn't recognize your voice at first.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. Yeah, I want to clear the air on something quickly, but then I don't know if we'll have time to touch on the political situation with Mr. Pisa, et cetera. But I've spoken on that already. And I have endorsed Mr. Pisa in conjunction with former Senator Andrea Worrell, and Mr. Johnson will verify that. Anyhow, let me go to what I really primarily call about. Now, I want for the radio station, and for the moderators, and they can get clarity on this. Now, I've heard for some time now this situation spoken about with the Coverley, that situation with the in the road when you turn out of Coverley to go east, which would be toward the airport, that projector.
Right.
And a lot of talk has been said about it. Now, pray tell me, that cannot be done by no ordinary person. That has been placed there by the MPW, and I want to clear something here today once and for all. I hope I won't hear this again when I finish. I just want the personnel or the experts from the MPW to come in and bring this to rest. Now, if everybody's calling for the removal of that thing does not move, a car doesn't have any brain. It's about vigilance and approaching that and using due care and attention. But if you're going to move that, watch the problem you're going to create, Mr. Wickham. You see, when you exit from the Bell, off of Bell Gully Road and come to the Bell, there's another one there too.
So no, man, but one the one there in Safari Road.
Huh?
The one in the Bell in Safari Road.
It has the same purpose.
It doesn't have. It may have the same purpose, but it's not Safari Road. The problem with the one at Coverley is it's literally in the road.
But the one in the Bell is onto that.
No, it's not in the same way. Roll, I'm telling you, I see it. The one that in the Bell is far
the
off the road.
When you turn
no, it is a it is a it is a thing a slip. It's a slip road, right? And it's standard triangle that you have for a slip. The one at Coverley is peculiar. I have never seen a slip thing in the middle of the road. So not in the middle, but it basically, if you drive straight along that road and you don't catch yourself, you could find yourself bumping into it.
But I'm going to make the point again. I'll reiterate that the purpose of both of them is to...
It's not. You can't, Raul, and I reiterate, you cannot compare the two.
Running the back of you.
Raul, you cannot compare the two. The problem with the one at Coverley that people have raised concern about is it's actually in the road reserve.
But the one
it's in the road reserve.
It
is not in the road reserve in the Bell. I have not seen a similar triangle like that anywhere else in Barbados other than up there. It's in the road reserve.
Okay, I'm going to close on this, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir.
I stand corrected. But when the experts come in and the check and the whatever, I think I was I will be vindicated then.
I will listen for the experts, but yes, I know I heard the person who is currently prime minister speak to a letter that was written by somebody in planning that said it was in the reserve. And for that reason, it should be moved. So unless the contents of that letter have changed, my sense is that it should be removed. Bulldozer, Saturday morning, done.
But Mr. Wickham, my take is slightly different in that I always carry this view and stance that people need to be vigilant.
Of course they have to be vigilant.
People need to be observe where they're going, due care and attention, and keep their eyes.
Oh, that is true. But if you put a light pole in the middle of the road, no amount of vigilance ain't going to help me because it ain't supposed to be there. I drive with an expectation that a certain amount of feet to the left and to the right of me will be clear.
Okay.
When you breach that fundamental principle and that assumption, it is possible I'm going to drive into something with all the best will in the world.
All right, Mr.
Roll, thanks a lot for calling. We're going to see if we can catch a couple more calls now. It's 22 minutes past the hour of one. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Peter. Welcome back.
Yes, sir. How are you doing? Good to hear you.
Good. I hope I see you on Saturday night.
You will. Yes, you will. And I bring company.
Right. Because I want to have a conversation on your death penalty. One of the things...
Not now, though.
No, not now. We're okay. Not now.
Death penalty. Yeah.
But, no. I want to make a couple of comments. The first thing is, I don't think a lot of people still really realize where Barbados is and how dangerously close we are to an economic collapse. I want people to look at Venezuela.
Are or were?
Pardon me?
Are or were?
Are or were dangerous?
Were dangerous. Are dangerous.
Close to economic collapse. Mm-hmm. Okay? We haven't gone over that there yet. And the illusion that people have is one that because Ms. Motley has come, everything now is going to be hunky-dory. No. The idea that we are going to go through this here without experiencing any pain, no. Okay? I want people to look at Venezuela and see that Venezuela, a country that has all the oil in the world, has all the land in the world, all those different resources, look at how they are in almost free fall right now because of bad government, because of bad economic management, and because of decisions that have not been taken in the best interest of the country. And I want people to understand the damage that this last administration did, in particular when you have ministers who presided over downgrade after downgrade after downgrade, especially in our international business sector. And where we are right now with the threat of losing that sector. And Ms. Motley now has to come and stabilize the patient first. There is going to be pain. We have to recognize this thing. So the expectations that people have and the criticisms that are put on Ms. Motley because they haven't seen any change in the prices of the NSRL and those sort of things, arguments which are being put against the government to say that they're not performing the way they should. These are ridiculous. Those are arguments that you want to put against the private sector, then go ahead and do that. But you can't make them against the government. We haven't seen anything yet that is to come. So people have to stop with this attitude that we don't have to experience for a lot more pain than we have right now in order to get us out of this. Okay? Now, talking about the Democratic Liberal Party, and one of the things which I feel, I don't want to say particularly sorry about people, but they keep thinking that we live in a stasis, that nothing is going to change. I do not see the Democratic Liberal Party getting back into power within the next 10 years if Ms. Motley and the BLP get us out of this economic situation right now. And as you said, as people said, the chance that Mr. Pisa ends up leading the party into parliament
is low.
But you are right in terms of she's the best choice right now in order to get the party on a footing where they can then try to attract people and attract talent in order to compete over the next 10, 15 years or whatever. But things will change. And one of the things, the challenges that the old parties have is thinking that you can contest elections the way you used to before. When they saw the production values of the Barbados Labour Party and what was involved in the focus of getting the of achieving the objectives of winning the seats and that sort of thing, this is what new parties are going to have to come and compete against.
Yeah.
So unless the Democrat, and I hope that the UPP and those other parties as well aren't going to stay in the same way that, again, thinking that they can win the way that things used to be. They have to compete and raise their game up to that level.
Mm.
And the final thing I would say is that I hope the changes, I want Ms. Motley to make certain changes, a lot of changes. One, we live in a technological age. And this reluctance to use technology to the best of its ability in order to ease business in Barbados, to allow people to do things. Like even the idea of thinking in terms of we having to have license plates on cars, you could put RF chips in every single car in Barbados that has all the information that you ever need on any car. And somebody could have a cell phone, a policeman could have a cell phone, or look at it and bam, bring up whatever it is.
No, I mean, I think it's an amazing moment that you and I can agree in a conversation on one or two points. And I think that we achieved that today. So I'm happy that you and I agreed on one or two points. This is certainly the analysis of the way forward. I also agree with you entirely that the way forward will not be the way of the past. The future of politics in Barbados is very dynamic. It's going to change. And the idea of either party believing that it can offer what it offered in the past and win, I think is a pipe dream. So we agree there. And I think that maybe we can tackle the 11 plus conversation next. And maybe we will have some form of agreement in that regard as well. This has been Down to Brass Tacks for the last 3.5 hours. It was good to have been with you. Happy to have had the opportunity to sit with you on a Thursday. It's first time in a while. Special thanks to Dennis Johnson. Also to all of you who called and made the program what it was. This format really works well when people call and engage. And you certainly did that today. And I was happy to have that. We have Mr. Larry Mears in the studio. He's going to continue with you for the rest of the afternoon, or for a good part of the afternoon. And we do hope that you will give him as warm a welcome as you gave me. My name is Peter Wickham, and I look forward to being with you again on Sunday for another program of Down to Brass Tacks.